As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
So then, the season is up and running, and we're back with another Why Always Us. This is your Manchester City podcast from The Athletic. I'm David Mooney. With me is Sam Lee. Hi, Sam.
Hello.
How are you doing today? Are you, you okay?
Yeah. That's another week of wait and see.
Let's go. Well, let's do another hour of wait and see then, shall we, in that case? The return of the football season is the perfect time to subscribe to The Athletic. Join now to read all of Sam's stuff on City, including a recent piece on how Gabriel Jesus can be regarded as a winger. And if you sign up now, you can get 33% off the price of a full subscription. Just go to theathletic.com/ManCityPod. Let's start, Sam, in the single most obvious place to start, I guess, for City and news at the moment. And I'm sorry that you'll hate me for this question, but I kind of have to do it. Kane updates? What's the latest?
Yeah. It's hard doing it on the pod. It's the constant... Yeah. The constant barrage on Twitter.
I've noticed any time you retweet me for anything, I just get replies of Kane updates. And I'm like guys, come on.
I know. I'm not going to say what I want to say on that. it's going to be a late one now. Obviously, last week we had these two timelines of events, and there was either it's happening this week or it's the nothing's happening at all kind of scenarios. Levy's not picking up the phone, not engaging kind of thing. There's elements of the confidence from City side that was definitely true in terms of, you know, City being ready for an announcement that week and all that kind of stuff, and confidence around the squad. And I've got to be honest, yesterday on Monday there was a bit of that again. So it seems like there's another plan in place for if they're in a position to unveil him this week, they're ready to know how to do that, and there's still confidence around the squad that he's going to come. So I can offer you that at least. But obviously there was the little elements, and the mad thing was there was three or four different sources all in the middle of the week before the Spurs game, all saying, yeah, there's been some sort of agreement, there's been some sort of breakthrough. And obviously that's not been the case, unless simply that breakthrough, that kind of knowledge of what Levy wants is still in place and he's just delaying. But obviously we're in the situation we're in now where nothing's really happening. Like I say, I always felt that if it didn't happen last week, then the alternative version of events, the ones from the people around Spurs, would be more likely to be true. And that is that, you know, Levy's just not engaging. And then I spoke to somebody at the end of last week who's worked with Daniel Levy on, you know, Kane and Modric and stuff, and been around him and knows how he works. He says he won't pick up the phone. Like he doesn't pick up the phone at this point. He just makes it difficult. He's a pain in the ass. And he'll do it late in the window. You know, he'll pick up the phone late in the window if he wants to do a deal. Now, obviously, the thing that's very difficult to glean from this all is still those two sides of it and the confidence at City. Where is that coming from? Where can that be coming from if it's not going to happen? But where is the insistence from the Spurs end that it's not going to happen coming from? Like, it's going to be one of those where it's just going to explode really quickly. Because we're having talking about scenarios yesterday. Like, can you see any scenario where City just don't bid now? Like, to bring you in and to make the listeners think, so it's not just my voice for 10 minutes.
Well, the thing that's troubling me about this is if City know the valuation that Spurs have, and City are, I mean, we've talked in the past about how City are not keen to be seen to be spending that sort of money. Do you know what I mean? The number of times where they've walked away from deals because it's 10 million too much. I mean, like Maguire, for instance. They thought Maguire would solve the defensive problems, but they wouldn't pay what Leicester wanted at the time. Then this summer comes along, they've dropped 100 million on Grealish, which was the release clause, and they've gone, we want him that bad. We'll pay the release clause. We're not going to negotiate about it. Fine, get that done. If the stories are that Kane is that Levy wants 150 million, 160 million, are the numbers that are being thrown around. If City are just not willing to pay that, I don't see why they would engage at this at the moment. It's either Spurs want to sell him and they'll accept 120 million, 125 million, whatever they're willing to pay, or they ain't going to budge. So I find it a really strange negotiation, this one, because If it's true that Levy's not picking up the phone, then I get what you're saying. I don't understand where that confidence comes from that the deal will happen. Because even if he is picking up the phone, if he's not going to budge on his valuation, then City aren't going to pay that. They're still so far apart in the two camps. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about this is I don't want to discuss all these hypotheticals at this point, because we just don't know. Like, we don't know how it's going to pan out. And I've seen a lot on Twitter, especially like when there's an article saying it's not going to happen. Everyone just goes really overboard as if that's gospel, but they don't really believe all the other stuff. So I don't want to go into, oh, it's a disgrace, they haven't managed to get Kane, because like it's still possible. I think I said this last week. If it gets to the end of the transfer window, then I'll completely agree. I'll be like, well, how could they have gone all summer under this false pretense that he was for sale? Because remember when United didn't get Sancho last summer and everyone basically took the piss because it was like, well, Dortmund said he wasn't for sale and United kept messing around, but he just wasn't for sale. Like, simple as that. They just wasted a load of time and it was very funny and United have messed it up, blah, blah, blah. Like, if it gets to the end of the window and Kane has just not been for sale, as Levy was saying all summer, then City would have probably put too much stock in that agreement that Kane thought he had, maybe, a bit like when they put too much stock in Messi thinking he could leave Barca last summer. But again, we'll cross that bridge if we come to it. Or the other side of it is, maybe City do, well, I'm sure City will make the bid. Like, I can't conceive of a situation where City don't make a bid. Like, even the fact that last week we did the story that Bernardo Silva doesn't want to go because, you know, Mendes is trying to help City in the sense that he makes things happen, doesn't he? He moves players around and City are trying to get Kane still. So he was like, okay, well, we'll try and get Bernardo to go. And Bernardo's like, no, I'm not having it. He's like, oh, well, do you want Ronaldo instead? He's like, no, we don't want Ronaldo instead. No, it's Kane. So even just based on that scenario, it's still Kane. Like, there's no way City, unless they're like, because there's been a suggestion that people at the club aren't as involved in the Kane thing as Pep is. But if, like, imagine City just let it play out and don't really do it and just go to Pep and say, we try. Like, Pep will be livid. And like, he has been before when they've not got their targets. But if they're like not even trying their best to get him, do you know what I mean? It would be a kind of a betrayal of Guardiola and just not how City work, you know, not how City value their manager. So basically what I'm saying is I can't conceive of, and you know what I'm like, you know, I will be devil's advocate all day and I will go, well, they could do this, well, they could do that. Even if I don't agree with it in any way, I'll be like, oh, they could do that, because mad things happen in football. But I genuinely can't foresee any way that City do not make a bid. Do you know what I mean? And I don't want people to go, oh, well, Sam Lee says they're going to make a bid. It's like, it's just common sense.
The way I see it, in kind of that relationship between Guardiola and the board, it might so be that Guardiola is much more set on getting Kane than anybody else at that football club. And I mean, you've said in the past that Guardiola's position is, I want Kane or nobody. That's the sort of that's the deal breaker. Is, you know, it's, I'm that's how much I want Kane right now. And I kind of wonder if City as a club are more than happy that if for the nobody option to happen, except that royally pisses off Guardiola. And again,
this is a man who's now in the penultimate year of his contract. So City will again be thinking, can we get this guy to stay longer?
Yeah, so I don't, I like you, I don't see how it doesn't play out with at least City going all guns blazing to try and sign Kane, whether or not he's for sale or not, whether or not Levy's going to pick up the phone and say, yes, okay, actually, that valuation, that does it for me, let's sort a deal out. And even if that's going to happen, are we talking kind of like 30th of August, 31st of August, right up at the end of the window?
Well, the thing is, like, you've got a weekend situation coming into it, haven't you? Because the window closes on, what, Tuesday? And if you leave until like Monday, that is very late. But I was working out earlier in the summer and I didn't think City would do it. But you know when they had a lot of leverage, more so leverage, with Alexis Sanchez? And so they were like, well, we're just going to wait till the end because they realised they need to sell and then we'll get it. And obviously it didn't work. But they were happy to wait until the last day. And I didn't think they'd do that with Kane. But quite possibly they will. But also, like I say, if Levy's just not picking up the phone until the last few days, then I don't know if it will be, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, or, you know, Friday, Saturday, you know, that kind of thing. But like, I'm sure, because again, I don't want people to go, oh, somebody says there's definitely going to be a bid. But like, it's the easiest story in the world to write. Man City preparing bid, you know, late bid, blah, blah, blah. Spurs braced for late bid. It's the easiest story in the world to write because it's just a guessing game. And that's basically what I'm telling you now. Based on my info of, you know, last week meetings happened with Mendes and stuff, and you know, the message being they're still in for Kane, the fact that Guardiola wants Kane so much, the fact that, you know, that City want Guardiola so much, it doesn't make any sense than for anything else to happen but City to make that bid. But I mean, it has been the ideas floated around that, you know, it's been reported recently, and we knew this all along, I think we said this before, but the only City bid on record so far is that 75 plus 25 slash you can have a few players from during the Euros. And there are people who think City just aren't that serious, and then, or at least they're never going to bid more than 100 million plus some add-ons. And if that's the case, then they've obviously thought this agreement is worth way more than it is.
Yeah.
Because it's become clear that it might, you know, it's going to take, what, 130 plus, 150, whatever. And then if that is what it's going to go for, but City aren't ready to pay that, and to be honest, that then starts coming down to needing to move players around, doesn't it? That then, yeah, it starts to make so much sense that it's like City obviously expected a couple of players to go and it's not going to happen. So you can see it dragging on late because it's like, well, City really need Bernardo to end up somewhere. And now you've seen there's reports of Chelsea going possibly for Saul at Atletico Madrid based on if Chelsea can get rid of players. And then if they get Saul on loan, then that maybe opens up a spot, although it doesn't necessarily give Atletico more funds, but it opens up a spot for Bernardo to go there. And then that could help City a bit. Like, it's complicated.
Yeah, and the story this week as well was that obviously they not that they're actively looking for Laporte to leave, but they wouldn't stand in his way. That was the other
wouldn't. But that's been the case all summer. But yeah, like, he's not expecting to go. Like, I know people who know him. He's just not expecting to go.
Yeah,
like, that's it now. Like, obviously he would have happily gone, and City would have sold him. But it's just not on the agenda at the minute. They said unless something very, very strange happens, yeah, he's going to be staying at City.
Now, this is a side to the Kane transfer that I am very wary of dipping my toe into, Sam. But I do want to ask this question because the thought struck me while you were speaking there. As we said earlier, City have been reluctant to be seen to be spending a lot of money on one particular player. And if this summer comes along and they do get Kane over the line and we're talking 130, 140, 150 million, whatever, it's not going to be 100 million. It's not going to be the Grealish level. It's going to be higher than that. They'll have dropped 200 plus million on two players this summer. And it almost feels like there should be an element to this that says, well, listen, you're the Premier League champions. Okay, you might have, like, the stories going around in terms of balancing the books at the end of last season. They earned more than this in prize money last season. So I really don't care about trying to sit here with a spreadsheet and working out what they can and can't afford. I'm not into that at all. But there should be an element of the squad was pretty good last year. Why is it in this situation, one where you haven't got a striker, because as we're going to talk about a bit later on, the Jesus role has changed a little bit. Why are you in this position where you haven't got a striker and you've not got one lined up knowing that Aguero is leaving? But also, isn't there an element of, shouldn't the answers be able to come from this squad that you've spent so long and so much money assembling? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you need to go out and drop this sort of money on Kane to reclaim the title again this season? Do you need to be able to take it to the next level by having to spend this money again?
Well, I think the thing is the problem there is, like, people kind of, well, I guess you can confuse money spent with all kinds of things, but basically it doesn't fix everything, does it? And yeah. Like, you could have the best squad in the world, but if they get complacent, which everyone accepts as a natural thing, then you need new faces, you need fresh blood in the squad to keep everyone on their toes, which is, you know, again, I'm always reluctant to use Ferguson's United as a benchmark on this podcast, but everyone knows that that's how Ferguson was able to keep his team at the top for so long, because he kept refreshing things. And like all the other examples of managers who never did that, or all the other managers who never retained a title, which is basically all of them. How many managers have done it? Ferguson, Mourinho, and Guardiola. I don't think Ancelotti did. And obviously Mourinho did it, and then it just went spectacularly wrong in the third season. So you need to keep things fresh. And then it's like, is there an argument that so much money spent means that players are immune from complacency or whatever? I don't think so. I mean, you could maybe argue that with so many people vying for places in the squad that it keeps things fresh. And I think we've seen a bit of that already with Laporte coming in and getting a chance. And we'll talk about this. And, you know, he's now going to play in the next game against Arsenal because he took his chance. And I guess Jesus will play in the next game against Arsenal as well, presumably from the right. And there is the argument, but also at the end of the day, if it gets to the end of the season or the middle of the season and those players or different players aren't playing and they're not happy, that's just, you know, human nature. And that was the issue last season, which is why City went into the summer wanting to get rid of a few players to keep things fresh and get rid of the, for want of a better phrase, the rotten apples. Do you know what I mean? Just to keep things fresh. So it's like, yeah, on the one hand, they've spent a lot of money and they've got a great squad. Don't get me wrong. In terms of on paper and the quality of the squad, they should still be favourites to win it. But there's other things that, like, money can't buy, really. The other argument is, does it have to be 150 million on Kane? No, of course it doesn't. But for whatever reason, they've decided this summer that it is going to be that way. And did it have to be 100 million on Grealish? No, it didn't. You know, if that's the kind of money they've got, I know, you know, in an alternative reality, which is what maybe some people would have preferred, there would have been a left back, there would have been a defensive midfielder. I still like the Grealish signing. You know, there was a lot of people after the Spurs game going, oh, I don't really need him. But I think he's going to bring a lot in terms of the cutting edge and creativity that City needs. So I'm fine with that. But yeah, I could probably accept the alternative argument that if you've got 200, 250 million to spend, they could have done it in a different way. But in terms of bringing people in, having spent so much money already, I would say always, because we've seen what happens if that doesn't happen, and just things get complacent, players get annoyed, and things can unravel really quickly.
This episode is supported by season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's talk about the Norwich game, Sam, because I want to touch on being back in the stadium for the first time. It was my first game in 18 months. I'd not been to any of the games that have had crowds at this point. So it's my first game since, I think, was it West Ham, the final game before the pandemic forced everybody to stay at home. Long story short, I was pretty nervous about going back. I'm not going to lie. I'd covered it up quite well, I thought, on Twitter, but I was quite nervous about being back inside a big crowd. But ultimately, I thought the atmosphere was really, really nice. There was lots of people around us that were. It felt very respectful of what we'd all been through for the last 18 months or so. And there was all this kind of how have you been? Have you kept well? Sort of thing, rather than it being this vociferous football crowd that I was expecting it to be really when I say like fan parks, do you know what I mean? I was expecting it to be a little bit too close and a little bit too personal for me. But actually, it just felt really safe, and it felt really that was really kind of a needless worry. It felt really nice to be back in my seat with the people that I've not seen since the West Ham game. You know, catching up with them all and all that sort of stuff. And the other side of it as well was the one thing I was really pleased to hear, when all the players took the knee, the stadium applauded, and it was a loud kind of applause over that. And
normally it's people start booing and then everyone else drowns out.
Yeah, but it wasn't
which it was at Spurs last week. Not this like a point scoring thing, but that's just every experience I've had in the ground so far, or even seen on TV. It's booing first and then applause. But yeah, I'd probably say the most impressive thing about the atmosphere, to suit my left liberal agenda anyway, was that. I was very surprised by that. I thought there'd be more boos as well, because there were at the end of the last season with the Everton game. But there didn't seem to be any, and that was good.
It was really nice. And then the final thing I want to say is that there was a real nice touch from Laporte at the end of the game, which I just happened to clock it on the big screen, where he was whistling, and he stuck his fingers in his mouth and was whistling. And I was like, whose attention is he trying to get here? So I watched it, and then I watched him kind of signal, oh, come back. We need to applaud the fans, because they're all back in, and it's the first tight sort of thing. And it was really nice, because then the players came out.
That's nice. That is nice. But fuck me, like, do they even mind it?
I know. But
I know people might accuse me of being negative there, but do you remember when everyone went to, a couple of thousand fans, was it, went to Kharkiv a couple of years ago, and the players didn't acknowledge them afterwards, and everyone was pissed off royally. And I think the fans got sent letters from the club, or from, I seem to remember Fernandinho being involved or something, like apologising. So I know how much that means to fans. And it's obviously very good that that Laporte was the one who did it, and slightly surprising, I may say, as well. But obviously, he enjoyed the moment, having had a good game, and the fans knowing his name for a while. If they needed to be reminded to go and say thanks to the fans, then bloody hell.
And then we all got in all right as well. The ticket system that we were all worried about failing seemed to actually work quite well. So we spoke a little bit about the reaction to the implementation of mobile ticketing. It seemed to work fine for me. The customer service in the build up to the game, not ideal, but
shocking, wasn't it, by all accounts?
Yeah, but the post match reaction seems to be that everyone or a lot of people got in okay. So that's good. So it was it was just nice to be back, Sam. Nice to you've been going to a lot of games in all this time in empty stadiums. What's it like for you to have a full ground again?
So I guess my first one, it was Wembley, really. Although with Wembley, there's a bit more distance between the press box and the fans. The first one was Spurs last week, and there was literally, in terms of the opposite of distance, we were on like the front row of the press box, and there was a row of fans right in front. And that was really good. That felt good among it. It was a good atmosphere at Spurs. And yeah, that was good. And it was good to be back and see a full Etihad. But I'm just one of those people, it just feels like it'd never been any different. Yeah. So people were asking me what it was like to go to games behind closed doors. And I was like, well, it's weird, but everything's fucking weird. You know, the last 18 months have been awful. Like, you never thought you'd have to shop on your own in a mask, but you do. And now it's just normal now. We do it and you have to do it. So going to games behind closed doors became a thing, and it was crap, you know, compared to how it is, but it just became normal and I got used to it. But it was like the first time I went back into a pub, probably last summer, and I thought it would be weird, but it wasn't, because it's
just all right.
Because these are the things you've been doing for all your life. So you're far more used to that than the alternative. And although things have been a bit weird, you just go straight back to it. And people are like, oh, will people be hugging now? Will people shake hands again after lockdowns? And you just go back to your behaviours. You go back to what you liked doing before. And being back in the football ground was really good. Obviously, it was great with loads of fans. But in terms of, like, how did it feel? It was just like, oh, yeah, okay. Like, it just felt like it had never been away, really, which is great.
Yeah, and I know you're delighted to have the ironic cheers back as well. So there we go.
Unfortunately, there wasn't any of them at the Etihad, was there?
No.
I mean, because Norwich didn't do anything, and Norwich fans were in no position to be doing them either, because everything City did just seemed to work.
Yeah, just wait till next Saturday, mate. There we go. Let's talk a bit about the game and the performance, because I want to read back a tweet of yours from during the game. Where you said, all things considered, opposition, it's his first game of the season, performance. I'm saying Walker's been absolutely brilliant. And low-key, it made me think, actually, aside from about, 10 minutes in the grand scheme of his City career, Walker's been pretty good for City. He's been consistently excellent. A high-performing player, yeah.
And what's this now, fifth season?
Yeah. He signed 17-18, didn't he? Beginning of 17-18. Yeah. And, I mean, getting Walker out of Spurs wasn't an easy easy transfer.
No, but easier than this one. He's been great. And like I said, all things considered, because I had to factor in the fact that it's his first game back, and which, you know, it's not easy to come in and perform like that. But also Norwich was shit. So it's like I had to balance the two things. Like I said, all things considered, even despite that or in favour of that, just thought he was really good, good, impressive first game back. And yeah, like you say, I mean, I wasn't surprised because he has been great all along, but there was just something about the performance, or it must have been something in that moment that he did something and just made me think, this guy looks like he's never been away.
Yeah, there was a number of passes, and it's weird because you don't associate this sort of vision with a fullback. But there was a number of passes where he spotted the through ball, like in kind of like De Bruyne style, not to De Bruyne levels, but De Bruyne style, spotting, well, if I knock it into this area here, and it was usually Jesus can run onto it and get the ball in behind, and it was that ball inside the fullback for Jesus to run onto, and it's the sort of ball that I was kind of thinking, I'm not sure Cancelo would see that. Does that make sense?
Well, I don't know, because Cancelo at his best, and it's probably a Cancelo conversation to be had, because when was the last time he was at his best? He hasn't played that role, has he? That role that kind of took everybody by storm in the new year when City were on that winning run, and he was right back, he was holding midfielder, he was attacking midfielder as well. He's not done that. And when he doesn't do that, I don't think he's as good. I don't think he's a left back. I'm not having that, and I never have. Although he had good numbers, I just don't like it. Like we saw at Spurs last week, whenever Grealish found him in space, it was this weekend. Whenever Grealish found him in space, he just had to cut back inside, and it's like, it's too slow. I don't like it. It's not right. The right foot as a left back, I don't like it, especially in the City team anyway. And then as a right back, as like a normal right back, when he's not going all the way through the positions, it's just not the same. But would he have spotted that pass? I think so. It was a very obvious pass to play, and I wonder if it was a specific move that it worked on, knowing how it would happen, or they're just so intelligent now in terms of knowing the type of opposition they're facing and what
and how to
do
react to
if
situations.
They're man marking. Yeah, exactly. So basically, and it's in the article I wrote on Jesus. Two of the goals were exactly the same. And it was Bernardo being man-marked by one of the Norwich midfielders. And they changed him at half-time, and he did it to both of them. And Bernardo he was starting off in the front line, but he dropped deep towards the centre-back who had the ball. And if it was Rodri in the second case and Diaz in the first. And obviously he was then followed. So that then, as you can imagine, opened that space up in the forward line between Norwich's centre-back and the left-back. And then the left-back was caught one-on-one. Walker ended up getting the ball from first Diaz and then Rodri. And as soon as he opened his body up, which again is one of those little cues that footballers get, and they will definitely get in this City Guardiola team. As soon as he opened his body up, Jesus went, right, see ya, darted in behind the left back. It was like, what's going on? And then the beauty of the pass from Walker is he spotted it and he had the execution to put it off twice. Because like you say, I think Cancelo would have done it, to be fair. But it goes to show the kind of high technical level of City's players that they can pull that off. And like you say, it was perfectly weighted. And it both times, Jesus only had to put one touch. He didn't have to control it. It was just put it into the box. And it was the own goal for the first one. Was it the own goal for the first one? Or have I got confused?
Yeah, Jesus played that across, and he played across.
And then
the
second one, it was Sterling. Oh, no, it wasn't the own goal. It was the Grealish one.
The Grealish one, and then
the
Sterling.
Grealish one, the Sterling one. And that was it. So it was perfectly worked. by this team operating on such a high level, even, you know, without being at their top, top level because of the preseason and whatever, just going to show that the players just know how to find these solutions. And again, it was Norwich. You know, they'd have to, you know, it wouldn't be that easy, I don't think, to do it against Liverpool at home or Chelsea at home against or United at home. But the solutions they needed to find on the day, they found them. And in those two goals in particular, it just worked perfectly.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
I want to talk a little bit about Gabriel Jesus, because if he was going to be the centre forward, as we said earlier, he'd have done it last season, because Aguero was barely there last season and Jesus couldn't take that role. So is this where he fits in now? Is he a wide player? We've always seen him coming from the left. I can't off the top of my head remember a time where we've seen him come from the right as we did against Norwich, especially from the start as well. So is this where he fits in now?
Yeah, I think so. Whether it's from the right or the left. Well, definitely, actually, because the way Guardiola was speaking was just like, it's a matter of fact now. And the fact that, so some of the stuff he said about Jaime Torres and their respective abilities could have been interpreted as quite harsh on Jesus, really. Especially, or at least just that, I don't know, something's changed in him. Because remember, Guardiola always used to say he's got that smell of goals. And you know, when he first came over and he was getting in all the tap-ins at the back post and Jesus was scoring loads of goals, it was always, oh, he's got that sense of smell. He can score loads of goals for City. But now it's, Torres is better in that sense. But in terms of the type of player they are, you know, Jesus is used more as a false nine at times anyway. And even last season, he was used more as a false nine when he did play, dropping off very deep. But Guardiola was just saying what they want from a striker, which is obviously why they're getting Kane, although he can do both. Somebody to make the move towards the box, to stay in the box and make the right runs. And Guardiola was saying that Torres is better at that than Jesus. But the interesting thing is, that's not always the fact. You know what you were saying then about if Jesus was going to be the striker, he'd have done it last season. So Guardiola was saying, you know, Jesus likes to drop a bit more, he likes to link up more, but he doesn't want that at the moment, and Torres is better at that. But he did want it last season, because he always played a false nine. And around Christmas, Jesus was playing the false nine. But it then became a fact that it was De Bruyne who was playing it, or it was, you know, Bernardo who was playing it, or Mahrez would play it sometimes, or, you know, sometimes it'd be two of them. He went with others. And I think the other thing with Jesus is, and another thing why I think in a different market he might have left this summer, is it's not just the fact that, oh, you know, he's got different characteristics and we want him to play wide. I think last season they thought, the guy's confidence is gone. He's not playing at a high level, so he's not going to play in the team. So I think that was the other reason why he didn't play last year, because it wasn't because they wanted a traditional striker, because they didn't use that, did they, last year? So Jesus, in theory, the strengths he's got in his game that Guardiola was talking about, as a matter of fact, would have suited what they wanted last season. But he didn't play that many games for other reasons. But now, yeah, it's almost like the Laporte situation. He's got this chance on the right. He was given a chance instead of Mahrez. And with Guardiola saying the other day after the game, if you play good, you're going to keep your place. So now it's that way that Stones got in the team last year, and Laporte and Jesus have got really good opportunities now to go and do that again. And the good thing about Jesus was he wasn't just making those runs in that kind of specific scenario I talked about a minute ago. He was just, you know, he looked confident when he was one-on-one. He was making things happen. He was getting good crosses in anyway. He obviously understood the role. Like you say, I think he's played on the right for Brazil, but it's not something we've really seen at City. So it's a really interesting thing. And then I suppose that leads into the debate of, are City better with wide wingers? And it would be very nice to see, or even last season, Guardiola always had one wide winger and one inverted. It was a kind of halfway house, wasn't it? But I'd quite like to see Jesus playing like that on the right and Foden playing like he does on the left. That would be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, the other side of it as well is Grealish in all of this. We haven't really talked about him this week, and I hadn't really kind of considered his performance in the Norwich game as one of the talking points because he was just good and that you know what I mean. But he's been staying a lot wider than I was expecting as well. And so I wonder if that's an element to stretch the game as well, if Jesus is wide on the right and Grealish is a bit more to the left.
Yeah, Well, in theory, they always do like to have that width. Obviously, with Grealish, you're naturally going to have him cutting inside. Again, it's different solutions for different games, isn't it? But the weird thing was, you know, we've mentioned this a lot, but Guardiola, when we asked him about, you know, why has things gone so well, he talked about going back to the ABC and stuff. But one of it was wide wingers. But obviously, Mahrez played so well, it didn't matter in the end. And he came back in the team and he was doing that inverted winger role. But yeah, they'll just find different ways. And again, Guardiola would always prefer a right-footed centre-back and a left-footed centre-back, but Stones was playing so well, he just had to go with two right-footers. So there's just different solutions for it. Yeah. And, you know, there was a time when he played that back, you know, the back three in possession, and the one on the left, he wasn't always a left-footer, and it was a bit awkward, but there was a time when he just needed to go with it anyway. And he did, and it worked. I think he had to do it in Dortmund, I think. And it was like, oh, how's it going to work? And it just worked. So, yeah, there's a lot of different solutions. And even though it's not maybe what he himself would classify ideal or what we would maybe like to see, normally he finds a way.
Yeah, let's touch on Torres as well, as he was nominally holding that centre forward position. It was almost like in the stadium, it felt like, oh, Torres has scored the opening goal. And then the stadium announcer didn't say it. And like, he was kind of sheepishly running around. I was in and around it, but I didn't score that. What are your thoughts on him this season? Because I thought he finished last season quite well. I thought he was unlucky with the situation at Brighton, with Cancelo being sent off and him being the sacrificial lamb to get another defender on, because I thought he'd done really well at Newcastle and was looking to kind of build on that from there. And there's the theory also that Guardiola signings take a season to bed in, and this is now his second season. So what do you see for him this year?
Yeah, well, I mean, I could do one of those things that would be clipped up and put on Twitter and say he needs to do much better this season, and he does. Like, I want to see loads more from him, just considering, you know, the potential he's got and all this kind of stuff. But I understand why it's been a slow start. Like, all of those things you just said. He's young, coming into a new team, new way of playing, new environment during lockdown as well. That wasn't easy for anyone. And also then he got switched from kind of playing on the right-hand side to the centre anyway. So now he's playing as a striker. And again, pre-season wasn't ideal. So anyone who has a bit of a slow start, I don't mind. But I want to see a lot more from him, and it could well happen once he's settled in, but I want to see so much more because he just doesn't get involved in the game at all. And that's whether he was playing on the right or playing as a striker. And obviously City's wingers are going to be less involved generally than, you know, the defensive midfielders, the attacking midfielders and stuff. And so the strikers, especially the strikers that Guardiola wants to stay up the pitch, but he's even less involved than even like last season. I saw some graphs made of how City players were involved in the game, and Sterling, when he was having a bit of a dip, he was way down. But all the others who were playing well, you know, Foden and stuff, and the ones that would come in and getting involved, they were so much more involved than Torres. Torres just, you just don't see him in a game unless he's scoring, which normally you go, oh, well, you know, he pops up with a goal, which can be useful, but we know how Guardiola's teams work. And I know he's in the box, he's making those movements, and he won't be touching it outside as much. But yeah, whenever people ask about Torres, I'm always like, I can't make my mind up. What I'm going to do is the coward's way out and say he's got so much quality and he's in a really good team that I don't. It's not that I don't doubt, because I do doubt it a bit. But if I had to put money on it, I would say he will come good. But I've not seen enough in my own limited view of football and potential, even bearing in mind, you know, the fact he's young and it's a new country and stuff. So I appreciate it's been difficult, but I've not quite seen anything that makes me think this guy's going to be a superstar.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm going to go with he will be, because chances are that Guardiola and City are probably right. But I don't know. Like, at the moment, I'm still a bit like, I don't know. I want to see a lot more.
I know the circumstances are slightly different, but I remember at the end of Rodri's first season thinking this guy never going to happen for him. And then he had a second fairly good season in the end. I thought the same with Mahrez. I saw at the end of Mahrez's first season, I was thinking that Brighton game at the end of Mahrez's first season, my reaction to him starting was, why has Guardiola done this on the final day of the season? And he put in a good performance, and then that he built on that for the year after. I do think there is something in that second season taking a year to bed in with.
Oh, absolutely, 100%.
And so I'm not ready to go in on Torres yet, but I do think
no. But it's one of those though. It's like if it gets to the end of this season or even the end of next, and it's like it wouldn't surprise me if he didn't make much of an impact, because I'd be like, well, there was that thing where he just didn't get involved in the game, and I always wondered how that would go. But also. And this is proper sitting on the fence, but it genuinely wouldn't surprise me if he came good either, for all the reasons we've mentioned. And settling in under Guardiola, we know it's difficult, but particularly for forwards.
Yeah.
And, you know, he made more of an impact in terms of goals, certainly halfway through last season when he was in the team, than, you know, Bernardo did, Sane did, Mahrez did, and that was when he was a winger. So, yeah, it's a weird one. I can't make my mind up on him. I wouldn't be surprised if it went either way, to be honest, but... That's because I don't know as much about football as, I don't know, City or even a lot of people. Well, yeah, or even a lot of people listening to this. I'm sure a lot of people will have stronger opinions than me, and they may be more founded on things than I have. But yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, absolute final word for today's show, Sam. I just wanted to say how excited I am at the prospect of watching a season's worth of Ruben Dias lofting the ball across the pitch to Jack Grealish, and Jack Grealish just taking it down and like taking it down as if it's the easiest thing in the world and running at defenders, because that pattern of the Norwich game, I don't understand how Norwich continually gave Grealish the space that they did when Dias had the ball, knowing full well that he would just swing it across the pitch and it would drop on Grealish's chest or foot and he'd run at him. And it was a joy to watch. I can't wait to see more of it, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, and the good thing is the first touch is there. I can't remember if I put that in my article or not on how he'd fit in. I can't remember if I put in how his first touch was good and how it'd be a bit like Mahrez. You know, you could switch the ball to him and he just gets it down and gets on with it. Whereas, you know, because with Sterling, that's not the case, is it? He kind of... I don't know, he just kind of puts his body behind it and waits for it to bounce up and hit him in the midriff and then go. It's just a very weird way of doing it. But with Grealish, you don't have that problem. It's just, control it and then you run at him. The only thing is, I was probably more impressed with Grealish's performance against Spurs than I was against Norwich. And I think when it got to the one-on-ones and when he did get into those situations, I wanted to see a bit more in terms of him getting past people or playing more of a killer pass. But like I say, there were times when he just found Cancelo and he had to cut inside, or he found Gundogan, and I don't think Gundogan's quite at his sharpest yet either, so again there's more to come. But yeah, there was an element of his performance the other day from Greenwich where I just thought I want to see a bit more from him in the one-on-ones, but like I was just saying, it's early in the season, so I can understand why there wasn't.
Yeah, and Dias and Laporte is your partnership for next few games?
Yeah, I think, well, certainly the Arsenal game, and if it goes well then it'll be afterwards as well, barring injuries, because like Guardiola said, if you play well then you're in the team. And the specific example he used was Laporte, and he said he'll play the next game. So I don't think you'll get rid of Dias, because Dias just holds everything together, doesn't he? He's got all those intangible factors that the others don't seem to have. But it's one of those where now, if Laporte's playing well, I don't think there's any pairing from those three, Laporte, Stones and Dias, that you'd be unhappy with.
Yeah.
I think they're all top, absolutely top class, world-class partners.
Absolutely. Right, well, that brings us to the end of this week's episode of Why Always Us. Thank you, as ever, to Sam Lee. Thanks, Sam.
Yeah, thanks a lot, mate. Thanks for listening, everyone.
We'll be back next week after the weekend's game with Arsenal. Don't forget, you can sign up to The Athletic right now with a 33% discount. Just use the code MANCITYPOD.
The Athletic.